Run Your Mouth World Headquarters.
In an effort to win back minority voters, Biden is reversing a ban on menthol cigarettes.
Look, I get it. I was poor and black too. So I'm gonna let you have the menthols. I'm gonna work on the fried chicken prices too.
Next up, we send pretty women in front of natural disasters to be oddly excited about people's misfortunes.
West of Omaha, we just have a row of homes totally destroyed, taken out by that powerful tornado. We're now seeing so many families that are left without a home.
And we interview the protesters, outraged over the lack of clarity about what their protest is about.
I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
It's your daily dose of misinformation pulled from a lightly hemorrhoided asshole. It's today's Run Your Mouth!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another fine edition of the Run Your Mouth podcast. I had a blast out in St. Louis this past weekend. And look at this, everybody. You can go to porchtour.com and look at all these porch tour dates that I have. I'm going to be in so many cities. Here's the logistics, and I promise you guys, we've got a packed episode of news coming at you, a lot of topics to discuss. But here's the deal. Porch Tour is coming in two stages. The first stage is going to be all cities that basically we didn't do last year. And then next coming, basically I'm waiting for Dave to get me his dates for August and September and October. And then we're going to redo, you know, hopefully Max will have us back, even though we promoted last year as being the last one that we were ever going to do there. But, you know, how many times have rock bands told you that it was going to be their going away, we're done with this band tour, and then they showed back up? And so here, just to read off some of the locations. Firstly, the first porch tour is going to be in West Palm Beach doing stand-up. Then I got a live pod with Clint. And then I'm going to read off some of these cities. I haven't booked all the openers yet. We've got Doylestown, PA. We've got White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Bethlehem, PA. Pittsburgh, PA. Virginia Beach, Raleigh, North Carolina, Austin, Texas. By the way, if you guys live out in Austin, that's going to be Thursday night before Dave's there. Maybe come into town a couple days early. That's going to be an epic porch tour. I know a lot of really great comics down in Austin. I will likely do a shorter set on that one just because this is now my third year down there. So I'll do all the new stuff and I'm going to pack that thing with some local comics. That's going to be a fun backyard hang. Outside of Dallas, Rockport, Texas, Cleveland, Memphis, Bon Aqua, Santa Barbara, Guanga, and Hawthorne, California. More dates coming at you. Still working on Boston. Still working on Atlanta. Savannah's confirmed. I don't have that date up yet. And then probably will also... Whatever, guys. Plenty of porch tour. Here's the last two dates I want to plug, and then we're going to get into the show. I'm doing a Old Man Hustle gig on 6 p.m. on Mother's Day. So if you're in New York City, come out for that. Going to be putting up some of my favorite New York City comics. And then the last gig I want to promote right now. That's it for right now. It's enough promotions. Let's get into the news. What do we got up first? Producer man. Oh, we're on the wrong thing. Let's get back into this guy. Oh, guys. They're giving all this talk about the cicada things, which are a pretty disgusting bug. I remember, like, as a kid, because these things come around every once in a while, you just, like, roam and you'll cross one of the shells of these things, and they're disgusting looking. Like, they're not as gross looking as a roach, but when you're just, like, hanging out outside, and then you see one of these gross shells on a tree, and they seem to last a fairly long time, and they're loud as fuck. Now, when they got their wings, you know, when they're, like, when they actually look like a bug, they're not that disgusting. But has anyone in their entire life actually sat around at home, heard the sounds of a cicada and thought, I got to get out there, I got to go harvest these things, and then I got to go online and I got to find a Google recipe so I can feed my entire family? Has that ever been anyone's thought while coming across one of these disgusting bugs? Not as disgusting as a roach, not as disgusting as a worm, not as disgusting as a maggot. And what do they have on people like Nicole Kidman or on the guy who played Iron Man, that both of these people have come on to the news shows and they've talked about bugs like it's like their wine sommeliers? Like, this is the larva the larva, or I love this disgusting bug. Here, this is from Time Magazine, and this is just so classic news spin, the way that they just assume their perspective up front. If you've wondered if you can eat cicadas, the answer is yes. Nobody has ever wondered that. In the poorest of countries where they're stuck eating cicadas, they probably just eat them because they're stuck with them. There's never been a person ever heard the sound of a cicada and thought, oh, I wonder if I can have that for breakfast. But here you go from Time Magazine. If you've ever wondered if you can eat cicadas, the answer is yes. They're low in cholesterol, you know, better than those eggs. Those eggs that you could be eating for breakfast, these bugs are even better for you. They're lower in cholesterol. They're crunchy. That's what we all want when we're eating a bug. Are you sick of eating worms and just having that soft texture? Do you want something closer to potato chip with more of a crunch? They're low in cholesterol, crunchy, and carry what has been described as a nutty flavor and shrimp-like quality. Here's how to catch, clean, and cook them from Time Magazine. Disgusting. We've got Harvey Weinstein is, you know, perhaps making a comeback. It's not clear yet. Basically, the New York City court case went up to the Supreme Court and they threw it out. They said that they had too many people giving testimony that weren't related to the specific crime that he was being tried for, which I wonder how that's going to play out in regards to Donald Trump and what's going on in his current trial, or even the deposition where they brought up the grab him by the pussy thing. Remember that with Gene Carroll when they brought that up in the deposition and that didn't play particularly well? Well, apparently, if you're going to try someone for a crime, I'm actually surprised by this. I would think you could have character witnesses or enough other similar occurrences to go, hey, this does display a pattern of behavior. And so it does seem more likely to me when this person's making this accusation that based on the fact that there's all these other accusations, it might be more likely. But apparently you're not allowed to bring up unrelated witnesses from different events. I would have thought that's the entire basis of what character witnesses are, but I'm not a lawyer. I don't actually know how these things work. So anyways, New York court case is essentially thrown out. They might have to retry it. Unlikely that they will retry it. Doesn't matter because for now, he still has to go to California jail, which for all I know, that might be worse jail. He might show up to California jail and go, can I go back to New York jail? I don't know what's the better or the worst jails, but I will call this. Firstly, if that guy gets out of jail, what are the odds that he pulls the Willy Wonka move and all of a sudden that limp just goes away? All of a sudden, that guy's walking upright. First thing that happens is someone shows up with a limo. Some lady gets out with a pillow. It's got those shots that he uses for his wiener. And just right off the bat, he goes, all right, we're back. Now go find me some plants. Which, by the way, if I ever had like a fancy Hollywood office, I would love to have that plant that he jerked off on. I feel like that would be a nice thing. People are like, that's a nice plant. You're like, yeah, that's for good luck. Harvey Weinstein jerked off on that plant. Now, if he actually gets out of jail, let's just imagine for a second he decided he was going to have a career comeback move and make a movie with Bill Cosby. How many women do you think would audition to be in that movie? Just to kind of showcase, you know, listen, Cosby's in the wrong, Weinstein's in the wrong, but I'm just saying to showcase just how crazy people are. Imagine if they actually, how many women do you think would audition for the Harvey Weinstein Cosby comeback film? If he was the producer and Cosby was the main actor, how many people you think would audition? You think it would be like when you used to watch American Idol, lines around the block? That would be an interesting sight to be seen. All right, let's take a couple of comments. We got Benny the Jet saying, yay, I made it, LOL. I know, it's tough to start a live stream. How dare you go on at the same time as HSR? Fair point, you know, but I'm live. You can catch that one later. Maybe they're live on gas. I don't know. I thought they did Thursdays. Alabama Mises Caucus, I can feel it coming in the air of the night. I don't know what that means, but we're going to be back in Alabama. That's going to be before Atlanta, out in August. One of four, let's go. Mike, yeah, cicadas are pretty gnarly. It makes everything sound like it's hot outside, if that makes sense. And why not feed them to your chickens and just eat the eggs? Problem solved. You know, practical wisdom. All right, what do we got next? Oh, Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction overturned. I already gave you guys the details on that. All right, now let's discuss Joe Biden going on the Howard Stern program, which was so odd to be seen. I mean, dude, when I was in high school, we used to listen to Howard Stern in the morning, my freshman year when we were in yeshiva. We thought it was kind of funny. We had a half hour break after prayer services that we would all pile into my friend's room. We would eat a bowl of cereal, We'd listen for a half hour, and then we'd go to school. And then in the later years, they had the E Show. He used to listen to the E Show. And then he went over to Sirius XM, and I kind of lost touch with Howard Stern. And then you had, when they started posting all these interviews, all the classic clips, they started getting a lot more of the content up on YouTube. And Howard Stern, in his prime, was the absolute funniest. And then COVID came around, and you couldn't root for that man anymore. You couldn't see him as your hero any longer. And this was so odd to see Joe Biden on with Howard Stern. And the old school Howard Stern would have been asking questions like, all right, we all saw your son's dick and it's huge. Like, is that coming from you? Are you packing some heat too? And when you're showering with your daughter, like, you know, are you getting turned on? Because I got ugly daughters. My daughters, they don't know how to turn. That's old school Howard Stern would have had some fun questions, which is exactly why the president would have not showed up, wouldn't have sat down with him. And it's odd because sometimes you see hear Howard Stern give interviews with rock stars and other people, and it's still fascinating. But then you get this, which is a nice recap of all the propaganda that the liberals like to throw at us, how Biden's brought back the dignity. He's an honest politician. He gets rid of the chaos in the system and all the things that he's approved. And my God, was this gross. And the big admission that he got out of him was that he said that he was willing to debate Donald Trump. We'll see if that actually happens or if that was just the off the cuff moment. Like, remember the scandalous things that used to happen on Howard Stern? This was the big scandal, was that you had Joe Biden saying, I'll debate that guy. All right, let's roll a couple of clips.
I want to thank you for doing this today. I want to thank you for your compassion. You know, the reason I'm so excited to talk...
I guess he gets the talking points beforehand of, listen, if you're having Biden on, just make sure to refer him as compassionate a couple times.
...to you was because I wanted to understand the tragedy in your life and how you dealt with it. And you're the kind of leader I love because we're lucky to have you in the Oval Office and serving as the father of the country. Because if you're a good father to your family, which you are, I know you'd be a good father to the country. And I want to thank you for providing.
I mean, technically, not a great father. One of his kids is dead. That's a very Donald Trump point right there. But he couldn't save one of his kids from military service or burn pits. So he didn't do a great job with that kid. He showered with the other one. We don't know what happened to her. And then the third one is a drug addict. And I guess, you know, the kid's done a good job of like making money for the family. But I'm saying, like, in terms of being a good dad, I feel like you can be compassionate towards your drug addict son. But like a really good dad might have prevented the kid from becoming a drug addict. Maybe this is just me lacking compassion here. But Howard Stern really firing off the liberal talking points. Let's continue.
A calming influence, an organized administration post-COVID, getting that vaccine out. I remember what the world was like at that point, getting NATO, getting us to feel comfortable, standing up to Putin, the incredible large growth in the jobs, unemployment rate down. I'll give you your greatest hits. The lowest uninsured rate in history. 4 out of 5 Americans are covered for less than $10 a month. Knocking off a few ISIS.
Really gave him the talking points right up front. Hey, help us sell this thing.
Leaders. Cutting the emissions in half. I mean, you've always been an environmentalist. Even the marijuana reform laws, enough with sitting there and fighting that battle. Respect for Marriage Act. What the hell is with people with this gay stuff? Who cares if someone's gay? How is it affecting anybody? People in love, it's good, right?
Someone went to Epstein's Island. All right, let's roll the second clip where we get to hear Biden say that he's willing to debate Donald Trump.
Fantasy I had. If you, sure. I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. Yeah. I'm happy to debate him.
This is how I would handle it. Tell me if I'm nuts. Well, I am nuts. But tell me if this is accurate. I would stand there on stage with Trump and I would repeat over and over again, excuse me, please find me 11,000 votes so that I can win the election. I would just repeat that over and over again.
Not the worst point. I think Biden's so whispery, I actually didn't even hear him there where he said he was willing to debate Trump. We will see if that will happen. And in terms of me constantly saying celebrate the future, live in the future and celebrate being right. So this was when Mr. Stern asked Mr. Biden if he would debate Mr. Trump. The president replied, I am somewhere. I don't know when, but I'm happy to debate him. And then this was from The Week magazine, 2024, will Biden and Trump debate? President Biden must ignore the network's news execs pushing him to debate Donald Trump, said David Frum in The Atlantic. In a joint statement, 12 news organizations last week called on two candidates to commit to a pre-election debate, saying the televised event would be a competition of ideas where they could argue their policies with each other and before the American people. They're like, we need viewers. Nobody watches TV anymore. This is the one thing we have. Please do a debate. You owe it to us. We're out here. We're pushing your talking points when you're on our team. If you're on the other side's team, then we're bashing you. But listen, we're all doing the same thing. We're all in business together, and we need this payday because nobody watches us anymore. Please do a debate. Continuing. That'd be fine if both men were normal candidates. Ooh, all right. I think some of the left-wingers have either started watching the show or predicting their bullshit in advance has just become this easy. But one is an aspiring autocrat willing to use violence as a political tool. After losing the vote in 2020, Trump incited a mob to attack the Capitol, hoping his supporters would terrorize, kidnap, or even kill his own vice president to stop Biden's victory from being certified. This conspiracy to overthrow the Constitution is the only issue that should matter in November. It's not something to be debated alongside inflation or immigration policy. There you go. We can't be debating Donald Trump. Sure. Do we have too many people coming over the border? Maybe. Are we currently entangled in two foreign wars that might escalate into World War III as we pretend like we're not involved but continue to send funds over there and we're also involved in the exact activities that escalated and led to the wars? Yes. But, you know, we shouldn't be debating the kind of policies of how we can be improving the country when one of the people is an evil dictator that unsuccessfully tried to stay in office. Dictator, no less. I mean, you would think a classic dictator would just stay in office. You know, he wouldn't come up with some sort of a Looney Tunes scheme and then go, all right, you busted me and just left. But he's a dictator. And we can't be having a democracy with the dictator that ultimately peacefully leaves. We can't be having that. And so what we need is to refuse to debate him. Did I not call this? They're already talking about, and believe me, that was an off-the-cuff comment from Biden. And then this is also what I was saying, where they got their antennas. They're testing the TV antenna to see whether or not this will stick with the general public. If enough Democrats get on board with the idea, and there's a lot of them that are just so anti-Trump, they just want to win. They don't care what kind of dirty tricks you pull. They don't care. They don't care if you got Donald Trump in court. They're like, please bust him for something. They don't care if that's not fair. They don't care if that makes us a corrupt country where the deep state can just go after any outsider. They don't care. They just go, I hate this guy so much. We have to get rid of him. And so they're testing this theory now. You're going to hear more of it down the line as the aides get a hold of Biden and they remind him that he has dementia and that he shouldn't be debating people. And they're already starting to test the waters to see if the general public will be very upset over Biden not debating. And so they'll try and play the card of, we can't even dignify this person as being the other candidate. We're still hoping that he gets removed in the Supreme Court, even though it's overly conservative, finally realizes the threat that Donald Trump is. All right. I think I've said enough about this. All right, let's take a couple comments. Samuel Gorman was a big fan. This isn't what Howard was ever about. And considering his career now, he is now sad. I mean, I was the biggest fan and you can't take away how funny he was when he was being funny and great. But it's so weird as a fan and having that guy as one of your idols doing segments like this. It's like a Howard Stern skin suit being worn by an NPR dude. That is well said. Shaking my head. I wasn't even a fan, but I'm disappointed in the magnitude of the cop-out. I agree. Michael coming in with a, hey, Robbie. All right. And then we've got Jesus von Einstein. The Fed's direction probably went into Congress to prevent debate about election irregularities. And Samuel Gorman, they have many toes in the water. All right. Continuing. Let's get into the Donald Trump trials. This is the latest from the New York one. And then we're going to take a look at all the shenanigans that went on in the Supreme Court in terms of determining whether or not a president is even allowed to be prosecuted for crimes that they did while president. So this is This is from the New York Times. Peter acknowledged that the hush money was effectively an illegal donation to Trump's campaign and said that Trump was worried about how the stories could affect the race, not about his family finding out. That may help prosecutors argue that Trump sought to win the election through illegal means. So this is, I don't even know why I felt like this was important. I feel like I covered this on the last episode. Because Donald Trump had a potential out if he wanted to claim, hey, listen, I was making those payments. It had nothing to do with the campaign. I was making those payments because it's embarrassing for me and for my family if people are finding out that I'm making all these hush money payments. But guess what? They didn't even play that card because the entire thing is nonsense. And so they just went, yeah, we spent the money so that you wouldn't hear about this. And guess what? It's not illegal for us to buy these stories, and it's not illegal. And by the way, you might want to change the law on that. That's an interesting one. Should you be allowed to call up a newspaper and tell them to go purchase a story so that it can't be published? And I don't think that that then suppresses the story from not being allowed to be published. I guess that just means that the person that sold you the story rights isn't allowed to comment on it. So I would imagine that if someone else were to find out that the story existed, they could then publish a story, hey, the National Enquirer purchased a story and refused to purchase it, I would assume. All right, moving forward, let's get into the Trump Supreme Court case. And I'm going to give some bigger thoughts from what I was seeing, and then we can read some specific stories and take a look at a few of the specifics that came up in the case. What do you guys feel about presidential immunity, just as a general concept? Do we think that we have a better system here where a president is immune from being prosecuted for crimes, or does that open up a way for them to engage in illegal activities that we wouldn't allow anyone else to do and then be immune from prosecution? So, like, part of the framework of the whole discussion was an acknowledgement that for some reason the president needs to be immune from being prosecuted for crimes that he commits while in office. And then they want to make a distinction between if the crimes that he does are personal, like, for example, he decides he doesn't like someone and so he just has them killed, or if it's for some sort of even the outer limits of his job. So, for example, if the president, I don't even know what that means. The outer limits of the job, it sounds like it's probably not that important that he break the law in that specific instance. But they don't really give great examples of why it's necessary for the president to be able to break the law in his job. The best that they can do is basically say that if we don't give them immunity, then the next person can always come in and try and prosecute them. But if that's the way that we always governed, where the next administration comes in and they try and prosecute you, sounds like you would be very careful not to do anything that was illegal. And that sounds like, might that be the better structure? If maybe, let's say you actually left office and then there was a review board that kind of reviewed your actions and whether or not you engaged in illegal activities, might that hamper the presidential power in a way that was actually better for us? Like, it's almost assumed by them that we need the guy to have a massive amount of power in order for him to do the job. But why is breaking the law a necessary part of the job? Wouldn't it be better if, I guess, we actually had a structure where you had to, like, figure out where what laws made sense to impose on a president? I don't know. Maybe I'm being more too autistic-y here in thinking about this. But, like, and then what happens if you're specifically sitting down and trying to get around current laws to push an agenda that's illegal? So, for example, you know, I guess wars that didn't go through Congress might be one of the most moral ones to consider. But what about when you just want to bribe your way back into office? You're going to, you know, make student loans. You're going to get rid of them, even though the Supreme Court said that you don't have the authority to do so. Or what about when you make it that landlords can't go and evict tenants? I guess maybe that was more the CDC. But, like, shouldn't there be some sort of a punishment for getting, not just getting things wrong, but if you specifically sit down with your team and exert authority for things that turned out to be illegal, and then you put more resources into trying doing things that are illegal? But anyways, we're going to read through some of the quotes here. But it seems that it's basically assumed by the Supreme Court that it is necessary that we have presidential immunity for elements that were part of their job, because if they were able to be prosecuted, none of them would ever want to, I guess, do the job or couldn't effectively do it. I'd like to see that explained. I'd like to know. Now, I understand the flip side of it where you go, and I like this, where it was almost a slap down of Jack Smith, the prosecutor, and going, well, we don't understand as the Supreme Court why it's so amazingly horrible what he did with these documents or in these other instances that you feel the need to prosecute him when we have yet to ever prosecute a previous president. And so that was a nice little slap down where they're like, yeah, I know you're saying that this is so horrible, but we're looking at the fact that no one's ever been prosecuted and we don't understand why this would specifically be the thing. And so if anything, this exact case is proof of why you might need presidential immunity, because without it, they're always going to be prosecuting the earlier guy over what might be nonsense. And so it would seem, just to kind of give you guys, before we get into some of the specifics here, the Jack Smith case, I guess it's probably over. They're going to kick it back down to the lower courts to decide whether or not the actions that Donald Trump took here were for personal reasons or were even on the outer perimeter of what a president is supposed to engage in. And if it's part of the outer perimeter, then it would probably be given the immunity that has been given to every other president before them. All right. So let's get into, I was on the plane the other day. I was reading like every article on this. I did find some of the arguments fascinating. And now that we've given that overview, why don't we, you know what, I'll take a couple comments and then we'll read through some of what I highlighted as being interesting commentary. This is from, let's start with Jesus von Einstein. The thing is, the Constitution doesn't say the president has immunity, so how can SCOTUS create it? All right, that's an interesting point. Mike, I think I get the argument for presidential immunity for official acts, but to your point, if there are very few actions so close to the edge of the law that need to be taken so rapidly that each action can't be sniff-checked, I guess. All right. David Allen, it would be hard to drone strike Americans if you could be prosecuted for it, which I think that stands to my point of why they should be allowed to be prosecuted for illegal activity. And maybe we can create a secondary Supreme Court instead of having lawyers for the president that then get to go do something that's illegal. So then it can then get argued in front of the court for the court to say, hey, what you're doing is illegal. Maybe we just restructure it where there's like a basically a, or the Supreme Court takes calls from the president and gets to rule on, hey, is this illegal or not legal? And then he can't do it if they say it's illegal. Maybe I don't know. I just feel like there's a way to restructure it, which that we're not in a better system if we just go, hey, this guy needs to be immune from anything illegal that he does. Biden should be prosecuted for deliberately subverting U.S., not secretary via open borders, and for having open borders to help Democrats while Americans were COVID lockdowns. I'd be okay with that. Or at least let's investigate Fauci. I would at least just compromise on that one. All right, let's go full screen on the articles and let's read through a few of what I highlighted as I think some of the things to note about this case. This is from the Wall Street Journal on presidential immunity, Trump included. The burden on the justices will be finding a balance that recognizes the unique duties of the presidency while also holding presidents accountable for genuine lawbreaking. A president needs to be free to make controversial decisions without having to worry that he'll be prosecuted for them after he leaves office, but he shouldn't be free to commit crimes that are unrelated to the office. So I just question that framework of that a president needs to be free to make controversial decisions. I don't know. I feel like there could be a review board at the time that he's making those decisions to determine whether or not they're legal or illegal. And that's the entire idea of like the different branches of government and not having a president with absolute authority. In Nixon versus Fitzgerald, the Supreme Court ruled that the president has absolute immunity from civil lawsuits for acts within the outer perimeter of his presidential duties. Mr. Smith's charges are criminal. So one question for the high court will be whether the Nixon precedent also applies to criminal prosecutions. It's hard to believe it wouldn't, since the threat of prison could influence a president far more than a civil lawsuit. Yet the trial judge in January 6th case in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals blew through this precedent as if it didn't exist. The three-judge circuit panel also wrote its opinion as if Mr. Trump is, I don't know that word, a unique threat to democracy, and thus no other former president would ever be charged with a crime. But as David Rifkin and Elizabeth Foley argue nearby, this ignores the reality of our current politics. Four Democratic prosecutors have decided to charge Mr. Trump three on criminal charges. In doing so, they have unleashed partisan furies that future prosecutors will exploit. If Democrats think President Biden won't be at least be investigated for crimes by GOP prosecutors afterwards. All right, let's jump to the next article. So these are the other cases that would imply that there is a presidential immunity across the board. I highlighted two of them from a different Wall Street Journal article. More fundamentally, in Nixon versus Fitzgerald, the court held the separation of power demands absolute immunity from civil lawsuits for acts falling within the outer perimeter of the president's official responsibilities. Absolute immunity is necessary because the president occupies a unique position in the constitutional scheme, and the specter of litigation could distract a president from his public responsibilities. Once again, I don't understand that. Let's continue, though. Next case. Harry S. Truman seized domestic steel plants during the Korean War, violating statutes that authorized the president to seize private property only in narrow circumstances. The Supreme Court declared his actions unconstitutional in Youngstown Sheet v. Tube, but no federal prosecutor suggested that they could prosecute him for conspiracy against rights or conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States, the charges Mr. Smith brought against Mr. Trump. And then I think there was another case in here of, I thought there was about what happened with internment camps as another example. All right, here's another quote. Like I said, I was on the plane. I was reading a lot of these, read like 15 articles. And so I'm highlighting what I thought were the, most notable things here. Hope you guys find it interesting. The risk, said Justice Brett Kavanaugh, was that a Trump trial could open the door to a new era of American politics where prosecution of ex-presidents becomes routine, much as the use of special counselors accelerated after the Watergate scandal. It's going to cycle back and be used against the current president or the next president and the next president and the next president after that, Kavanaugh said. Trump himself amplified that concern before arguments began Thursday. Crooked Joe deserves life in prison, Trump said in an email to supporters. Put Biden on trial. So two counters. Firstly, it might be better because if you actually equally applied or decided what kind of criminal cases could a president be prosecuted for, and maybe you could argue that trying to undermine fair elections is one, or ruthlessly going after the other candidate, or I don't know, undermining the free press, which is all things that Biden has done here. You would think maybe there are some crimes that a president should be prosecuted for. And on the same note, I would venture to guess that if we lived in a new environment where it was tick for tack and we changed the immunity, the presidents could go after other presidents. Well, I actually even think that would probably be worse because for the most part, they all play for the same team and they wouldn't go after each other. And I think we've all seen the control that presidents do have over the Justice Department in terms of how much resources they want to put into these kind of cases. All right. This is a different paragraph. If a president can be charged, put on trial, and imprisoned for his most controversial decisions as soon as he leaves office, that looming threat will distort the president's decision-making making precisely when bold and fearless action is most needed. Once again, you're not explaining to me why we couldn't have a secondary court that told you that either your actions are illegal or not legal. Like, give me some specific examples here of when we need a president to make an immediate action where a judge cannot rule. I mean, we do that for warrants. You have to call a judge and you have to get a warrant. Doesn't that circumvent this entire problem? You're telling me that the president cannot get on a phone call with the judge and get a ruling about whether or not what he's doing is legal or illegal? Like, give me the specific. What is the case here where a president needs to be doing something that is illegal? That we would all agree after the fact that if we heard about it, we'd go, yeah, he made the right call there. Let's continue. Liberal justices, however, suggested the greater threat to democracy was a decision that effectively placed the president above the law, not one holding him to the same rules that apply to other high officials as well as ordinary Americans. Telling the most powerful person in the world that there was no possibility of punishment for breaking the law could turn the Oval Office into the seat of criminal activity in this country, said Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. All right. Jumping forward, Chief Justice Roberts said the grand jury process wasn't enough to protect the presidency. You know how easy it is to many cases for prosecutors to get a grand jury to bring an indictment. Doesn't that sound like, once again, you got to change the whole system here? Isn't that a pretty horrible admission when you got someone on the Supreme Court saying, hey, it's very easy for prosecutors to rig the grand jury process so that they're able to, bring court cases against people? He said, adding that he wasn't speaking of the Trump case in particular, reliance on the good faith of the prosecutor may not be enough in some cases. I'm okay with the second half of that. And then this was a great moment to play the quote. But Roberts asked counsel lawyer point blank why Skoden. Let's give this a listen.
So the Court of Appeals below, whose decision we're reviewing, said, quote, a former president can be prosecuted for his official acts because the fact of the prosecution means that the former president has allegedly acted in defiance of the laws. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, I think it sounds tautologically true, but I want to...
We got to pause it there. Firstly, what a slick fucking lawyer. Chronologically true, because you don't want to say, yeah, that last lawyer, that last judge was full of shit. And the last judge basically said that once a prosecutor is bringing it, that, well, then clearly there's a case here because otherwise they wouldn't be bringing it, which is very circular logic. Well, then why even have the court case? If the guy, if the prosecutor can be assumed to be correct, why don't we just say that the guy's guilty once the prosecutor brings it? It must be true because the prosecutor said it. All right, I'm getting bored of this. I think I got one more quote that I wanted to read. No, perfect. Look at that. Right when I said that, we're done with the topic. All right, let's take a couple of comments over here. Samuel Gorman, being president is basically just doing secret war crimes. Mike, and I'm sure this protection is 50% for doing stuff with our taxes and 50% extracurricular drone strikes. That's pretty good. All right, let's take one more. Someone's telling me that I heard that incorrectly. Tautologically true. I don't even know what the fuck that means. All right. Last thing on this. It's about separation of powers. They didn't want the courts getting involved in political decisions. That's why the court of jurisdiction has to be political impeachment. Oh, I did miss that point that even Trump's lawyers actually argued that the process here should be that in order for a president to be found guilty criminally of something is that they should be impeached first. And if they are first impeached, then there can be a trial for it. The problem with that is like, well, I don't know. Let's say you did something really illegal. They don't find out about it till afterwards. So I don't know. I don't know that that process made sense to me, but that's what they were claiming. Guys, let's take a moment. I've flown through 36 minutes of content, and you know, we haven't gotten paid $1 for any of this, which is why now's the time to tell you guys about ZephHemp.com. My good friend Wes from Zia Extraordinary Farms. Guys, you probably got a lover, and she probably hates you because you never massage her sore muscles. I bet they're all the time. She's complaining or he's complaining. I don't know what you're into, and they're saying everything hurts. This hurts. That hurts. You know what you do? You bust out the Zia Extraordinary Farms. It's got that, it's good. I've been trying to use it on my tit. I fucked up my tit skiing, and so I've been in there. I've been grinding it with my thumb. Is that helping? In my head, it is. I can tell you that the material of the Zia Extraordinary Farms makes for an excellent like thing for massaging in. It's got a good silky smoothness. Can't say I've jerked off with it yet, but I've thought about it and I probably will. Is that the official usage of ZephHemp.com? Probably not, but you know, whoever puts something slippery in their hand and doesn't think about whether or not they're going to jerk off with it. Sometimes you even just get turned on by the very solution. All right, listen, guys, I wasn't trying to talk about what I do or don't masturbate with. What I was trying to tell you is that if you want CBG topical oil that you can use to massage your sore muscles and make things feel nice, you go to ZephHemp.com, use promo code RYM and RYM25, and you get yourself a nice discount and go stock up, support the sponsors. All right, now the latest from the Russia-Ukraine shenanigans, and off of Dave's recommendation, I've been listening to that Pat Buchanan book, Churchill, whatever, in the Unnecessary War. I've even been giving Gary Richard calls every once in a while when I come across something. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me. But it's amazing to me, and I know this is some real stupid hippie shit right here, but just how dumb war, like every time you hear about any of these wars, like you read about World War One and World War Two and how it escalated into these massive killing campaigns and just like the opportunities that were to de-escalate, and you just realize, and I got a theory now. I think part of the stupidity of warfare, it's kind of what we were talking about, the Israel and the Irans, that the leaders, they're always in base, they're never allowed to strike the leaders. Like, I'm just saying, you know, people are always asking, what would you do? I would be like, I wouldn't kill civilians, but I'd be ruthless towards the other leaders. I feel like that's the way that you ever guys ever watch. What was the show? Homeland. There was this scene in Homeland. If you guys never saw it, it was a great show where something was going on in Russia. And so the CIA actually seized all the assets from this general in Russia. And then they got quick actions because they actually went over after someone in leadership. Seems like all these wars, it's always just punishing people and the civilians. It's like I would get the hacking teams. I would figure out how to seize every dollar that Hamas ever had. I'd figure out drones that every single time any of them ever tried to leave a house, they got assassinated. I'd figure out how to hack every computer that they've ever accessed. Like that's the kind of shit that actually makes changes, is when the people at the top actually have problems. Even in North Korea, that's probably true. I don't know how you actually get at that little chipmunk-looking weasel guy, but as long as he can live over there, to drive his fancy cars, enslave all the people, have sex with all of them, and sell coal to China, what does he care? And what does it help that we have sanctions and then that the people living there are starving? Does that situation ever change? You got to figure out a way to actually go after, like, the head people. Because otherwise, what does the whole thing matter? Maybe this is just stupid hippie shit in my own brain. But anyways, I'm reading about what's going on, the latest from Russia and Ukraine. And the war, I think we've all, with our coverage, acknowledged that this was stupid from the beginning. Biden could have just said, hey, we're not extending NATO into Ukraine. We wouldn't have had this war. I think the big pitch was, oh, you know, Russia's going to go and take over all of Europe. I don't think that ever turned out to be true. Then you had the thing, well, America needs to show strength as countries. We can't have countries just invading weaker people. And so we need to make sure that that never happens. Sure, we've been running around the globe in all sorts of other countries, but that's a whataboutism. You don't want to point out the hypocrisy of all the countries we've been engaging in war in when we say that borders are the most important things, even why people are pouring over our southern border. But that's the thing. Borders are very sacred to the American people. And so when borders are being violated in other places, but then what happens when you lose and you didn't actually enforce it? And then you just make us look weaker. Like, what possible victory at this point do we think is coming from the Ukraine war? That we continue to send money over there? Do we think in any single way that we're pushing back Putin? Do you think in any single way he's going, all right, you guys won this, I'm going home? Do you think we're getting that apology letter? Do you think that we're getting that we're going to be able to try him for war crimes? Or do you think that our involvement in this can only head towards escalation or, at a minimum, more Ukrainian people dying? So here's some of the latest coverage. This is from Week Magazine. The commentary: U.S. officials predict the new weapons will buy time for Kiev to replenish its military ranks and strengthen battlefield defenses. So I guess part of it is they have to track down all the people that have been dodging the draft, all these old people that were outside of the range of the draft. There aren't enough people to die on the front line, so they need time to replenish the military ranks. Before an expected Russian offensive, the Post said, but most say Ukraine had no clear military course to regain the 20% of its territory Russia seized. The good news, one U.S. official said, is that Russia's year in this war has not found a way to substantially take advantage of the Ukrainian weaknesses. Now, this is, you know, from the liberal left spin. So Russia is not seemingly going to go and take over all of Europe. And continuing the war is so that they can get more people on the front line, which is basically they're saying so that they can go die. And Ukraine will not be able to regain the territory. Why not de-escalate and why not call it? If there's no path to victory for either side and Putin's not going invading all Europe, which was the big pitch of what was going to happen, why not just call it? All right, continuing though. This was from piece in the in Zero Hedge, and there was a recap of some of what's going on over there. And I thought this was interesting. Russia's military-industrial complex continues outproducing NATO's. I've referenced this before, but Ron Johnson was doing a debate on Zero Hedge, and he said that one of the problems in this war is that it costs us significantly more per bullet. It costs us a lot more to produce the same supplies, and that's because of the deals that Washington cuts with all of these military companies, where the same exact materials are costing us more to produce than these other people. Russia's military industrial complex continues outproducing NATO's. Russia won the race of logistics, the war of attrition with NATO long ago, and that's when it continued gaining ground over the past 18 months. The sanctions failed to bankrupt the Kremlin, required resources for production remain readily available, and sabotage had no impact on the assembly lines. Not only has NATO been unable to stop Russia's military-industrial complex, but it couldn't ramp up its own during this time either, thus creating an unbridgeable gap that weakens Ukraine more by the week. But doesn't this, like, kind of showcase our weakness as well? Remember, the big thing was we have to go oppose Russia, because if we don't oppose Russia, then it makes it more likely that China is going to go take Taiwan. Well, didn't us going and putting up a loss and not actually doing the homework? Because here's what happened. We thought that we were going to bully China and India into backing us in this, hey, we're all going to team up on Russia, and it didn't happen. And the second that that didn't happen, this war just should have been over, and the Biden administration should have, I guess, they were, you know, they could have blown up the pipeline then and gone, all right, I guess that's all that we're going to get out of this. And for all those people, I mean, all the propaganda was, hey, Putin's going to go and take over all of Europe. Let's see if that happens. And then the other one was, well, we need to police all these borders because otherwise China, look, you put up a loss. Everyone sees this as weaker now. And not only that, but as I'm warning, you know, why are we remaining in this just for potential escalation? This is from The Wall Street Journal. Polish leader warns of wider war. Russia has fired several missiles at Ukraine that have crossed into Polish airspace since 2022, a provocative show of force by Moscow that risks igniting a wider war, Polish president blah, blah, blah said. The most recent incident was on March 24th when a Russian cruise missile targeted Western Ukraine, entering Polish airspace for 39 seconds, according to the Polish military. We have no doubts that it is a Russian provocation when there's a missile entering our airspace that it turns around and goes into Ukraine. Why are we playing this game for things just to escalate? What comes out of this? And then this was the last one I'm going to highlight. This is also from Zero Hedge. Ukrainian drone strikes target Russian oil refineries again, despite White House pleas. Another example of this thing escalating. And now we're sending them the long range missiles as well. And then lastly, Ukraine withdraws Abrams tanks from front lines after Russian drone attacks. Once again, just kind of showing the weakness of our gear that the stuff isn't even working. I also wonder how much war is going to change moving forward with cheaper drones just costing so much money for like oil tanker, not oil tankers, but for like battleships and more established commitment equipment to get rid of. And the freaky side, though, is these little dogs and us just shoving some guns onto some dogs. Do you guys see the dogs with those flamethrowers? That's some creepy shit. All right. And now last topic that we're going to cover on today's episode. But before we do, why don't we plug another sponsor? Sheathunderwear.com. Guys, I've been telling you about sheaths for years. If you don't have your sheaths, you're crazy. There shouldn't be a single fan of the Run Your Mouth podcast that isn't showing up to Porch Store and showing me off your sheaths. You want to show me your bulge? I'll look at your bulge. You just want to show me the label and let me know that you are a big enough dedicated fan of the Run Your Mouth podcast that you went out and you got yourself the greatest underwear that's ever graced the balls of man. I'm not even asking that much of you. I'm asking you to step up, upgrade your game, and be more comfortable with inside of your pants. It's summer season. You're going to have some hot, sweaty balls. You might as well be keeping this in separate compartments with the underwear that gets rid of all that friction between your legs. And get the long ones. I like the long ones that go like a little bit just above the knee. The other ones, it's like panties for men. You know, they come up high. You can really show off your quad muscles if you got them. You can really show off your package. If you want something that's going to make you look sexy as hell, you get the ones that are like the higher ups. I like the longer ones going down, which keeps my legs nice, slippery, and smooth. Which, believe me, just if you haven't tried a pair of sheaths yet, go check them out. Use promo code RYM and get yourself 20% off the greatest underwear that's ever graced the balls of man. And from what I understand from Bobby the Bank's last episode, you can stack promo codes. So even if they got a better promo code on the website, throw that in there. Let them know that I sent you. All right, let's take some comments. Some quack. Conversely, American people don't seem to care about sovereignty. I don't know how to pronounce that word. An African nation's fair enough. Danny G., we were warned about the greed of corporations. I agree. David Allen, Russia was supposed to take over Kiev in a week, but didn't. So Ukraine is winning. But if we stop the money, Putin will take Paris in a week. Makes more sense to me. Mike, ad man of the century. That's what I've been saying. All right. And then this was on the last one. Yes, Rob, that's the law. Impeachment first. All right. So there was a lot of talk about these protests that have been going on at college campuses. Got these kids illegally occupying their college campuses. Did see an interesting conspiratorial article that they, which isn't even, I'm looking at the tents. These all look like matching tents to you guys. There were people saying it was all Soros funded. None of these kids, they care. They just want that Soros money. And he went in there and he was giving out checks, telling them to be on their college campuses protesting. Anyways, I got distracted by Big Biz saying, Rob, DM open for bulge picks, bulge review episode, the battle of the bulge. Listen, anyone wants to send me nudes at anyone at any time, robsnewsroom@gmail.com, male, female, something in between. go for it. Yeah, if you guys send me nice enough sheath bulge pics, I'll do it. I'll do an ad read of the Run Your Mouth bulgers, and we can review some bulges. Maybe I'll ask Robert if he wants to sponsor free porch tour tickets for the nicest sheath bulge. I don't hate that promotion. All right. Anyways, going back to our serious, hard-hitting news. So you had all these protests, and I was wondering what is going on that the college kids seem to be so outraged over what's going on in Israel, as opposed to so many other topics. And you get some people that want to go, hey, it's because they're all anti-Semites. And I'm going to say, I don't think it's that. I actually just think that it's that Israel is acting a little bit too Jewy. And now I'm going to break it down for you with some real hard-hitting, bigoted analysis right here. That, you know, first is, it's hard to tell when you're in a prism of being messed with by the media. So, for example, during COVID, when I got COVID, I was doing all the coverage of COVID. I was telling you guys how it's nonsense. Go get outdoors, live yourself a nice life. But believe me, when I got COVID, you think I was afraid like it was just a cold? No. Every Jew fear came alive of, oh my God, am I going to be the asshole that dies of this thing after talking all this shit about COVID? I was making all the calls. I was trying to figure out where to get the ivermectin. I was staying in my house. I was being responsible. I was eating chicken soup. The point just being, we're all kind of suckered by the news. You know, if they keep going on and on about something and they keep telling us about how much of a problem it is, you become a little bit more on edge on it. And so you got to wonder, like, what other tragedies are going on in the world that we don't see constant coverage on, so we don't necessarily care about as much. And so are we paying too much attention to any particular topic at any particular time? And now I want to put forward that I think Israel maybe has like an Andrew Tate problem. And what I mean by that is, like, you take Martin Shkreli. Martin Shkreli, I think, had a similar thing to Andrew Tate, which is sometimes you got to be evil quietly. It's a skill. And so Martin Shkreli came around. I don't think he was doing anything any worse than anyone that's ever worked in the pharmaceutical industry, but I think he just loved talking about it. He was a pure capitalist, and he wanted to be in your face about, hey, listen, I'm making money. This is the way the system works. And everyone else who's ever bought a drug and jacked up the price were like, you're not allowed to tell people about this. You're not allowed to take pride in it. You got to have the salesmanship of, we're doing the best in research development, and we're creating the tools that the people need to be healthy. The people in the machine who are better at sales don't like it when you're out there and you're blowing up their spot. And I think Andrew Tate's got a, even though all the women stuff, you know, that shit all seems pretty creepy. I never paid that much attention to him. I'm downwind of just all the complaints of how terrible Andrew Tate is and everything that you read and you see about him. But he took on a similar thing where he didn't care, and he was just in your face about the way that he just didn't care. We'll leave it at that. I don't know what more to say about that. I think Israel's got this thing where they go ahead and they do these things, and then they try and tell you, we're the most moral, or we're the most allowed to be aggressive because of the things that happened against us. And so on January 6th, you know, after October 7th, I forget the dates here. What was it? October 7th, they're taking out ads on our kids' shows on YouTube. They're telling us about all these rape cases. They're putting it really in our face with the trial where it's like, we were all on board. We're all like, what happened was terrible, but then, like, they kind of went overboard in selling it. And then they kind of go overboard in the way that that's where I start saying it's a little bit Jewy. And then you start getting annoyed, and then people go, well, that's anti. And I'm like, no, you're just kind of, you're playing your PR card wrong, where you're attracting too much attention with your bold statements about how the evil that you're doing is completely acceptable, which is different. I understand that's different than exactly what I was saying with Shkreli. And the point I was trying to say is that their PR called too much attention to their evil. And so it seems to me like maybe Israel's doing a similar thing where they're just courting attention in a way where they can't get out of the news. And so they are drumming up more outrage. And it's because of, like, the way that they're actually trying to handle the PR on it. All right. So with that said, here's a good example of exactly that. So Egypt has tried to put together a peace deal, which I'm not saying it's a good peace deal, not saying it's a bad peace deal. I don't know enough about it, but let's read this one particular line. Domestic pressure for Israel to reach a deal is mounting. Benny Gantz, one of three members of Israelis' war cabinet on Saturday, said the Israeli government shouldn't reject a responsible outline for the return of the hostages, or it shouldn't have the right to exist and lead military campaign in Gaza. However, like, that's where I'm saying they're being Jewy, where it's like, oh, the slightest bit of compromise is you telling us that we don't have a right to exist. No one's telling you that you don't have a right to exist. It's like, but you guys always take it a little bit too far. All right. And then, that's all I want to say on this. I don't know why I had that last piece. All right. That is our episode. Thank you for hanging out with us. I do have, stick around. I got a little outro thing. But let's take a couple comments. And then once again, guys, if you're in New York City, please come hang out. The people at Old Man Hustle, the only comedy club in New York City, they give me some spot time, so I'm able to work on the stuff. They were nice enough to give me a premium Sunday spot, 6 PM to put up my friends and do a show. So if you're out in New York City, it's going to be a good time. Come hang out for that. I'm back in Poughkeepsie, New York on some random Saturday night. I've got some Hatem Graber shows. I got to get in East Rutherford, New Jersey coming up. He's got some festival thing going on. And then you can get all the Porch Tour dates at porchtour.com. They're all right there. If I'm in your area, come hang out. All right, let's take a couple comments here. More eyes need to find his mail. Criminally underrated. Thank you, sir. I'll take the criminally underrated part. This man. Oh, you've corrected it right there. Show deserves more views, man. I appreciate it. Spread the good word. Let people know. Let people know to tune in. I'm loving it from Danny G and Big Biz. Got to come out to Long Island again. That was a blast. I'm in talks to play that pool again, because that was really fun. Good people out there. All right, and those donuts. Woo. Omega Supreme with cheese, 100% right on Martin. His biggest crime was talking about it. Agreed. All right, guys, that is our episode. Porchtour.com. I got to redirect. Summer Porch Tour is if you want to remember last year's Porch Tour, you can go to summerporchtour.com and see all the gigs that we did there. But new year, new places. Play the outro. That's our show. Thanks for hanging. Peace.
I'm a gaff man.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, I mean, anyway, I just.
I'm a gaff man.
Imagine what we could do next.
4 more years. Pause. 4 more years. Pause.
Sometimes making things up, being a Ted Raptor is pretty tough.
He got shot down in New Guinea, and they never found the body because there were a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea. But one